Good afternoon, everybody. Okay, so I have no relationship to disclose. The objective of today's talk is to discuss the zoonotic disease risk and exposures associated with daycare and petting farm facilities in urban settings, and I'll present a cluster of E. coli associated with this type of facility in Michigan with a One Health lens. So people love animals. We know this from our own experiences that contact with animals is a good stress reliever, and it provides important opportunities for education and entertainment in public settings. Public settings may include fairs, educational farms, petting zoos, and animals in schools. However, animals can carry pathogens that cause serious illness, and these are referred to as zoonotic diseases, which we all probably know. Local and state public health, animal health, and wildlife agencies can develop policies and regulations to reduce risk associated with animals in public settings, but zero risk is not possible to achieve. So the risk of disease from animals is not always high, but does exist. Animals shed pathogens. Even healthy animals can harbor and shed pathogens. And young animals, the cute ones, are more likely to shed. These pathogens can contaminate the environment, and some pathogens can be in the environment for months. And people get exposed to the pathogen either directly from the animal through fecal-oral mode of transmission or through the environment that is contaminated. Many pathogens have very low infectious dose, and meaning that you only have to be exposed to a small amount of pathogen to get sick. And your risk of becoming ill depends on risk factors, and these include children under the age of 5 years old, the elderly, pregnant women, and immunocompromised persons. And they're all at higher risk for serious infections. And such persons should really weigh the risk of contact with farm animals. So common illnesses we see associated with petting zoos are listed here. Campylobacter is the most common we see in Michigan. And then STEC 015787 can be particularly dangerous to children due to the risk of hemolytic uremic syndrome, which leads to kidney failure and potentially death. So now if we look at where people are living, people are increasingly living in urban, suburban, and peri-urban areas, and peri-urban is defined as the urban transition zone, where urban and rural mix and sometimes clash. In peri-urban settings, including peri-urban agriculture, must be addressed as populations move toward living in these urban centers, so does livestock and agricultural systems. So there are huge benefits to raising livestock in more urban settings, one being food security. However, raising livestock in an urban environment raises serious concerns regarding environmental quality and public health and neighborhood character. So I'm going to specifically talk about petting farms right now, which is just the collection of farm animals such as goats, ducks, sheep, and sometimes docile wild animals such as turtles or deer for children to feed and pet. And petting farms really have no single federal regulatory agency oversight. And as a definition of petting farms, it suggests children are the target audience for these enterprises, but young children are at most risk for serious infections. And although visiting petting zoos present a small risk, the risk is real for visitors acquiring zoonotic infection. And the risk of acquiring infection is potentially higher in urban children who may not have acquired a natural immunity compared to kids living in rural areas on farms. So, and we all probably know the One Health approach, but it's an integrative effort of multiple disciplines to attain optimal health for people, animals, and the environment. And together, the three make up the One Health triad. The increasing trend for animals in urban settings is well suited for the One Health idea, and the cluster that I'm about to present on the sugar toxin producing E. coli associated with a suburban daycare petting farm in Michigan is a nice example. So I'm gonna talk about the outbreak kind of in this who, what, where, when, why fashion, but kind of out of order. So I'm gonna start with what first. So we have E. coli, which is just a bacteria, and this specific one produces sugar toxin. It's spread by the fecal-oral route, and the incubation period is usually 3 to 4 days after exposure. Symptoms include diarrhea, abdominal pain, cramping, nausea, vomiting, weight loss, and fever. And then hemolytic uremic syndrome, which I mentioned a few slides ago, is a condition that results from the abnormal premature destruction of red blood cells and is a serious complication of STEC. And it has a mortality of up to 10% and can lead to renal failure. So now the who and the when of the outbreak. So we had 4 lab confirmed cases and 1 epi-linked case. 4 out of the 5 were female, 8%, and the median age was 6, but had a range of 3 to 18. And the first case became ill on October 14th of 2013, and the last case became ill on October 28th, and the median duration of illness was 9 days. All 5 cases had diarrhea, and 3 of the 5 had bloody stools. 2 of the cases were hospitalized, but fortunately there was no cases of HUS. So now, how are these cases linked, or, you know, how are they all affiliated together? So they all occurred in Wayne County, which is in Michigan, and it's the most populous county in Michigan, labeled in red on the map. And the population of the county it's 1.7 million people, making it the 19th most populous county in the U.S. And it includes the city of Detroit, and then all these cases were exposed, that city is 8 miles from Ann Arbor, which is also an urban area. So really the county is very urban. And so after interviewing the patients, we found out that within this county, there's a facility, which is a daycare and day camp and a petting farm, all in one that the cases had all attend. So the daycare has over 300 children enrolled, which is huge. And the ages range from 2.5 to 6 years of age, and the day camp can accommodate up to 280 kids a day, and the farm has over 130 animals. And the mission of this facility is a country-style setting for your child's beginning education. So here's a picture of the daycare part of the facility. So the students in the daycare visit the farm as part of their daily routine. The children feed and pet the animals, learn about the care and farm maintenance. The children in the day camp program take part in a variety of activities on the farm, care for the animals, ride horses, go swimming, etc. Here are just a few cute pictures from the website of small children feeding goats and pigs and holding ducks. So this is quite common on the farm. So the animal inventory, there was 132 animals total at the time, 68 poultry and 37 ruminants. So, and ruminants are cows, sheep, goats, in case someone doesn't know, and then some other animals. So the farm and the barn of the facility were actually very well maintained and very clean. And here are just a few pictures of the barn and the housing pens for the animals. So for like a parent, this probably looked great. No disease, right? Nothing. There's also an animal checkout program, which was very popular. So kids could take a goat, a kitten, a bunny, a duckling, or a chick home for the night or for the weekend. So animals were transported in a carrier that you got put in your car, and they were sent home with enough food. And then, so on the right, there's a picture of Goaty and her friend that she is taking Goaty home for the weekend. And then above is the record keeping. The farm talked about how it's not super accurate, but they have, you know, who takes what animal home and when. So then, you know, the farm is clean, well maintained. So how did this cluster of STEC happen? Well, let's go back to the One Health approach. So we have the environment, which includes the farm and the daycare and the day camp and a playground. Then we have small children. And then we have animals. And this commingling really is a high risk for zoonotic diseases to spread. And so we investigated this cluster by interviewing the patients, doing a site visit, and doing animal sampling and testing. So the interviews show that 3 of the 5 cases had direct exposure to the farm in blue, but what about the other 2 kids? We'll get back to them. So for facility licensing is really an issue that arises with these types of outbreaks. The daycare is regulated by the local and state level, but the petting farm is not regulated by anyone. So USDA may license petting zoos, but there's an exemption for exhibits that only house farm animals. So really no regulation of the petting farm happens. So the site visit findings demonstrated a few violations to the licensing rules for the child care center. One, children could wear their street shoes indoors as well as to visit the farm and to play in the outdoor playground. This really is a potential exposure for the kids who didn't go to the farm. The kids are bringing back fecal matter on the bottom of their shoes, and then little kids are crawling all over the carpet and eating things, you know. Other issues found were sanitizing procedures were not in place for tables used during the day for both school activities and lunch, and then proper procedures not in place to prevent cross-contamination risk in the kitchen when handling raw meat. We looked at hand-washing facilities. The farm area did have bathrooms. However, no running water in the barn, but there was hand sanitizer. The facility does have a ticket system in place after they had an outbreak of salmonella a few years ago or prior to this outbreak. So the kids get a ticket after they wash their hands that they have to give to get their lunch or to get a drink, which is good. And then in late November, so about a month after the actual cluster of STEC, the health department went out and did some testing. There were 16 rectal swabs taken from animals, from four samples of fresh feces or from the animal pens, two environmental swabs, one fecal sample from a recently adopted goat, and all the samples came back negative for STEC, which really isn't too surprising. It was a month, but. So then we made a lot of recommendations to the facility. First was to really follow the compendium of measures to prevent disease associated with animals in public settings. I think the last one was written in 2013. The need for staff training about zoonotic risks associated with animal contact, especially that healthy animals can still shed pathogens. And really, children under the age of 5 should be very supervised when interacting with animals and really should not have any contact with the poultry. And then hand washing facilities were just not efficient for the huge numbers of visitors they were receiving. And all the animals should have permanent individual IDs and better record keeping to allow for animal tracking. They did have a vet that would come out once a year and make sure all the animals were healthy and up to date on their vaccines, but it was very hard because none of the animals were actually tagged. And then sending baby animals home with small children is a very high risk for zoonotic disease transmission, and so they might want to reconsider their checkout program. And then also making sure that parents really understand the risk of zoonotic disease. It's not to discourage this program, but parents should, especially if you have a 2.5-year-old, it's probably not the best idea. So animals in urban, suburban, and peri-urban settings. Concerns? Well, there are some concerns. Petting farms are a growing commercial enterprise and really are not regulated. It depends on the state and local health departments, but in Michigan, they're not regulated at all. There are opportunities for zoonotic disease transmission. And really, hand washing is the single most important prevention measure. And as we see more animals coming into urban areas, looking at it as this one health approach and kind of systems thinking is very important. And I believe personally that this particular facility is not a horrible idea. I mean, it's a good educational opportunity for kids, but there's also a high risk with some of these younger children. And so these are just my acknowledgments, my mentors for my fellowship, and any questions?
Thank you, Veronica. We have time for some questions.
Yes. Did I understand that the petting zoo is also open to the public other than the children there?
It's not open to the public, but the day camp is from my understanding, it can be like a school can sign up, like with a class, they can come for the day and visit the farm. So they have that kind of program. So it's not necessarily to the public, but you don't have to be registered to go.
Because I wonder if you did active surveillance looking for cases of other children that may have visited at the time.
Right, yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah, good point.
Did you do any testing of like the kitchen for bacteria?
I don't think they did at the, I don't think any. The issue with raw meat and
E. coli can be like what the other two questions for.
That's true.
Not necessarily
true.
So not
true.
And then when you tested them, did you also try to do some kind of some degree of molecular analysis on it to try to figure out like E. coli?
Yeah, you mean on the kids?
You tested the animals and they were all coming out negative, right?
Mm-hmm. So all the kids were molecularly tested and all linked. And then all of our environmental samples were negative, so we couldn't actually link it, right? I mean, and it could have been, within just the daycare setting, E. coli spreads. But there's animal situation kind of, raises some questions. Right. Yeah, and I mean, we didn't necessarily pinpoint it that it was the animal's fault, but it's a high risk. So, any other questions?
I'm curious, with the public health right now, is that the animals? What species were the animals? Did you just test the ruminants?
I think it was mostly ruminants that were tested. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
So what about the two that were not?
So the two, they were part of the program, they just, for some reason, were not visiting the farm in the, the days prior to becoming sick. So I'm not sure why not. I think maybe one of them was young, like was a three-year-old, and then I'm not sure why the six-year-old didn't, or was it just an interview mistake, because the local health department did the interview, so I'm not sure exactly why they weren't visiting the farm. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. Okay, our next session, and we should have some time for questions for Jessica at the end, is Global Animal Health Engagement, Army Veterinary Service Approach to Stabiliops. So you notice it's a different uniform from mine. Okay. All right. Well, Major O'Lear is the Livelihood and Food Security Advisor at the Center for Disaster and Humanitarian Assistance Medicine, working on integrating animal health considerations into DOD global health training and education. He spent most of his Army career in operational or policy assignments related to global animal health and on veterinary engagements to include 5 missions on the African continent, and developed the Veterinary Support and Stability Operations course, which I'm an alumni of, and which is 2 sessions and very good course, I have to tell you. Got high evaluation from me. And he's a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Preventive Medicine, and he holds his DVM from Louisiana State University, LSU, something like that, and has a Master of Public Health with a concentration in humanitarian assistance from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, and completed a policy research fellowship recently with the RAN Arroyo Center. So please welcome him.